On today's episode of Let's Slocums,
all the other doctors are actually employed by the government, and government employment comes with a lot of benefits, and I didn't really understand the difference. So lots of benefits that as a locums family doctor, you don't really get. The other thing I didn't realize was that you have to have a 2-year visa in order to qualify for government health care there. And I would had only planned to be there for 18 months. So we did not have a 2-year visa. And I thought, okay, no problem. I'll just get private health insurance. And I researched all the private health insurance before we left, found something I planned to get called Southern Cross. And then when I got there, I found out you actually cannot get private health insurance unless you also have public health care.
Welcome to Let's Locums, the podcast hosted by Drs. Mark and Allison Royer, ENT surgeons and the founders of SpecialtyLocums.com. Join us as we explore the world of locum tenens and help you navigate the options for a flexible and rewarding medical career. Welcome to Let's Locums. My name is Mark Royer. I'm an ear, nose, and throat surgeon and locum tenens physician. I'm here today with a very special guest who I've known for many years. Her name is Dr. Mandy Dornfeld. She's a dedicated family physician with roots in Indiana and over a decade of experience in full-spectrum family medicine, including hospital care, office visits, obstetrics. In 2022, she and her family embarked on an expat adventure, moving to the northern island of New Zealand, where she embraced the challenges of rural general practice. Mandy is passionate about providing high-quality care across all life stages. She's also a pioneer in breastfeeding medicine, and she's my physician as well through her direct primary care practice, Sage Family Medicine. Outside of work, she enjoys hiking, traveling, and spending time with her family, her three kids, and Dave, our CPA, an amazing CPA, by the way. Dr. Dornfeld, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I will make one correction only because it matters because of the world events. We actually went to New Zealand in 2020, not 2022.
Yeah, right in the midst of COVID. So what inspired you and your family to take the leap and move to New Zealand for a locum tenens position?
I was an employed physician employed through a large hospital system and actually was pretty involved in physician leadership, but became pretty disillusioned with the machine of medicine and realized that I wanted to do something different and planned to start my own direct primary care practice. And in taking that leap, my husband and I realized if we wanted to do any work outside the country or live abroad, this was the time to do it between practices. I had always wanted to live abroad. I didn't get to do like a semester abroad in college. And I always thought that would be a really cool thing to do with our kids. So they were kind of the right ages. So we decided between starting my business and ending my employed position that we would go spend 18 months in New Zealand.
So amazing. So I think one point that's important to make, you were our medical staff president. You had obtained all sorts of designations, I remember, on the PEDS floor specifically. You were so instrumental in the hospital. And the fact that someone gave their heart and soul to a hospital could come to feel that way, I was like, well, man, if this is going to happen to Mandy, then nobody is safe. Everybody has to realize that this is a risk of practicing in medicine in the 2020s. So you decided you wanted to make this leap. Were there specific professional or personal goals that you were hoping to achieve?
Well, you know, the first question is, where are you going to go if you're going to live abroad? And so New Zealand rose to the top pretty quickly. I felt like we probably should be in a place where English was the primary language because we knew this wasn't like a permanent move. We weren't going to be there for years and years where our kids could learn a second language. We wanted to be in a place that was relatively safe and that where healthcare was somewhat modern because not only was I practicing, but I have family and I want them to be safe if they were to need medical care, which unfortunately our son did need medical care while we were there. So those two things pretty quickly narrowed it down to New Zealand. Also, obviously, I needed to go to a place that would allow an American physician to practice without having to retrain because I didn't have time or desire to retrain in another country. New Zealand does have a avenue for American board certified American physicians to practice. They have a program called EPIC, not the EMR, that it is nice in that basically you kind of apply to Epic, and it's a consortium for all of your board certifications and your medical training and your board exams and da 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 da. And they vet everything. And then once you're through Epic, then you can, you know, you're off and running.
How did you go about finding a locum tenens job specifically in New Zealand? Did you work through an agency? Did you apply directly to the New Zealand government?
One thing that's interesting about New Zealand is it's kind of two-tiered as far as employers. So the government employs almost every type of physician in New Zealand, except for primary care. And primary care in New Zealand is essentially a family doctor or a GP. Pediatrics is not primary care. Internal medicine is not primary care. So that's unusual. Those are actually considered specialties. I didn't really understand a lot of that at the time. But basically, GP practices are independently owned, privately owned, and then they contract with the government, essentially kind of like an HMO. The government gives them a per member per month fee to take care of that member each month. But so you're actually employed by a private practice as a GP. All the other doctors are actually employed by the government. And government employment comes with a lot of benefits. And I didn't really understand the difference when I first went. So government employment comes with like 4 weeks vacation, 3 or 4 weeks of CME time, about $10,000 in CME money. So lots of benefits that as a locums family doctor, you don't really get. I was essentially a contractor, and so I didn't get any paid time off or CME or sick time.
You didn't even get tea time in the afternoon there, I remember, right?
The other thing I didn't realize was that you have to have a two-year visa in order to qualify for government health care there. And I had only planned to be there for 18 months. So we did not have a two-year visa. And I thought, okay, no problem. I'll just get private health insurance. And I researched all the private health insurance before we left, found something I planned to get called Southern Cross. And then when I got there, I found out you actually cannot get private health insurance unless you also have public health care.
Oh, wow.
So jeez. I didn't know that. No one told me that. So we really could not have any covered health care there. An important part of the story is that we arrived in January of 2020. And
like literally hit the ground.
Yeah,
January
literally
2020.
Like the middle end of January 2020. The first day of school there is around February 1st always. So we got there about a week before school started. And then about a month later, you know, COVID hit and the world shut down.
And New Zealand had very strict restrictions,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. So basically, we were kind of getting our feet wet and trying to understand how the country worked and realize this insurance issue. And then COVID hit. And I got really nervous, like, what if one of us is really sick with COVID or we get intubated or, you know, we need some health care. So we ended up buying essentially like a traveler's insurance policy that would pay for something catastrophic. As it turned out, the New Zealand government later came out and said they would cover all costs for COVID, no matter who you were. So
if you're there on their soil, you are covered.
Yeah. So mostly because if you think about it, they needed to protect their citizens. So they needed to be sure if there was someone sick that they were isolating, that they were being cared for, and they wanted to control the situation. So New Zealand had a very strict lockdown. They realized they have very, very few ICU beds in the whole country, and they realized it could overwhelm the entire country. So they instituted a strict 6-week lockdown, essentially. Healthcare personnel could work, but we basically saw almost everything virtually. So I did go to work, but the lockdown was really interesting. I don't think people understood who were outside of New Zealand what that entailed. So basically, you could not leave your town. There were barriers up, so you could not even drive out of your town. You could not interact with anyone who was outside of your household. They called it your bubble, and they didn't want you to even like be seen interacting with someone who wasn't in your bubble. My situation was different than other people who weren't in healthcare because I did go to work, but they really didn't want us interacting with each other, even though we were at the office. So we each kind of stayed in our little room, and you couldn't go to the lunchroom and eat and take your mask off and things like that. You had to eat separately. We lived right on the water on the North Island. It was a very, very beautiful part of the world, but you couldn't go swimming in the ocean. You couldn't go boating because the thought was if there's an emergency that happens or there's an accident, then the emergency personnel would have to interact with you and that would put them at risk. So
wow.
Couldn't do anything.
We got pretty bent out of shape here when we had to wear masks when we walked into a restaurant before we sat down to eat. If you weren't in healthcare, can you even like go for a run outside or
you
anything?
You could
like-
go for a run. Yep. You could go for a walk, but that you shouldn't be walking with other people. Yeah. Of course, all the stores were closed. Everything was closed except for grocery stores and pharmacies and doctor's offices. Only one person was allowed to go shopping at the grocery store. So it wasn't like you could take your family or whatever. So yeah, it was a really interesting time. The other thing that was interesting, after the lockdown was over, they eliminated COVID. And so it was safe to enter, to, you know, be in the country, to go to travel around the country. But they always had a fear that somehow COVID would enter the country. And so they were very strict and passionate about making sure that everyone kind of checked into everywhere they went, because if a COVID case were to appear, they wanted to be able to contact trace and see where you'd been and who'd been exposed to you. So they have an app. In fact, I think I still have it on my phone, called New Zealand COVID Tracer. And you would open the app and you would scan a QR code every place that you went so that the government could see everywhere you'd been. And I remember thinking, there is just no way this would work in America. No one would go for that.
So between the health insurance and then this lockdown, did you have moments where you're like, what the hell have I done? Did that ever cross your mind? Or
absolutely.
You know, pretty...
And you know, we specifically rented a home that had a spare bedroom so that we could have family. We had family lined up to be, someone would be there all the time.
I think
family
we were on the list for a while.
Yeah,
there.
You were on the list. Our friends from Montana had already bought their tickets. So we expected to have nonstop visitors and to have friends and family visiting us. And of course, this changed everything. No one could visit us and we couldn't leave the country. And we definitely considered leaving, like just abandoning all of this and going back to America. But at that point, New Zealand was the safest place in the world. Looking back, you know, I mean, we made it through. Most Americans made it through, thank goodness. But we didn't know what would happen.
Right. You didn't know. There's so much uncertainty, right?
It kind of felt like it would be ludicrous to go back to America, where it felt like things were very, very unsafe. And from the COVID perspective, and we'd be putting our family at risk. So we stayed with the knowledge that basically we couldn't leave. I mean, if I'd gone back to America too, where would I work? Didn't have a job. So it was, yeah, it just seemed like that would have been a really horrible mistake. So we decided to stay.
So you stayed, the lockdown used to last about six, like that intense lockdown was about 6 weeks. And then they essentially had like zero COVID for a while there, right?
Yeah.
And so then things eased a little bit and got back to kind of normal. You were able to... And now the kids took up sailing and presumably went to school, or did that kind of...
Yeah, they went to school. They went to public school. We lived on the North Island on the Coromandel Peninsula. I did work with a locums company. He gave me a few choices. I chose this area for one thing because I'd been offered a job that was in a more populated area in a larger city, but it also was a huge employer. Like a really large employer with lots of people and lots of levels of management. And honestly, I wanted to get away from that. And I really didn't know what that would look like. And I felt like I didn't want to, again, be a part of a situation with a lot of administration kind of telling you what to do. So several reasons I chose this job. It was a very rural. It was a very beautiful area of the country that was appealing. We lived right by the ocean.
What was the name of the town?
Whitianga. It actually started with the W-W-H-I-T-I-N-G-A, but it's pronounced Whitianga in the Māori language. And we did not realize how difficult the drive would be to get there. So you kind of like drive up the peninsula and over a mountain and around this road that's kind of scary. So it really took some effort to get there, and it took some effort to leave, which looking back, I wish maybe we'd been in a more central location so we would have had more opportunity to travel. But you'd never even been to New Zealand.
How far were you from Auckland? Is that the drive from Auckland you're describing?
3 hours from Auckland.
3 hour drive from Auckland.
Mm-hmm. But it wasn't an easy drive. It was a hard drive. You know, every time we take that drive, the kids would get car sick every single time.
One thing I've noticed in ENT when I looked at jobs abroad and in New Zealand specifically, because that's like the, you know, that's the pinnacle, right? Everybody, like, that's the cool, I think one of the coolest creds of practicing medicine as an American, in my opinion, and among those that I interact with seems to be, oh man, that'd be so cool to go to New Zealand. It's pretty badass. But one of the things is the pay for specialists specifically is really low compared to the U.S. So, for example,
if you think if it's low for specialists, you don't even want to know what it was for family.
So I actually do know, want to know what it was. So for ENT, around the time that maybe, you know, they were probably making USD as like a locums doc, I don't know, $1,200 to $1,600 for like a clinic day, right? Mm-hmm. It'd been like $400 New Zealand dollars, mm-hmm. which at the time, and I think was the time when you were there, you know, would be like $300 US dollars. So, I mean, you'd essentially, it was like work 2 weeks for a day of pay, or at least a week for a day of pay. What was the pay like for primary care?
Yeah, it was about $400 for half a day. And that's how they do it. They call it a session, and a half a day is a session. So $400 New Zealand, which is $300 US. The idea when we went, my husband's a CPA, is that he would get some sort of non-CPA job there just to make a little money and meet people. But then all this happened with COVID and the lockdown and the kids doing school from home, and so he didn't end up working. So that also made it difficult. We really wanted to be able to travel a lot, but I didn't get paid if I wasn't working. They didn't really want me not to work because they were paying me. They wanted me there because they needed help. So school vacations and things like that, desirable times to have off, they didn't really want me to be off. So it made it challenging.
Pretty dark days when you got there, it sounds like.
Okay.
I think things got better because you and your family were on the best show of House Hunters International that I've ever seen. So from worst to first,
best.
Yeah, right. Hey, listen, I've objectively looked at the Royers House Hunters episode and the Dornfelds House Hunters International. There's no comparison, man. That yours was impressive. Not only was it well shot, but you guys did great. It was truly a really good episode. You get there, everything's locked down. You have this health insurance debacle. You're thinking about heading back and realizing, well, you know, that's going to be unsafe. You're like, you're in this horrible dilemma. To then a year and a half, 2 years later, Allie and I are sitting in Indiana watching you guys on House Hunters International in a great episode.
Yeah, well, thank you. So it's only fair to mention here that Mark and Allie Royer were on House Hunters in America. So that was our inspiration. And David, before we went to New Zealand, kind of was like, I don't know, looking online and realized he could apply for us to be on House Hunters International. And if you know my husband, David, this is one of the most
uncharacteristic.
I'm
shocked to hear that right now.
And he's the one who applied for us to be on House Hunters.
Wow. Wow. That is shocking to me.
Before we went to New Zealand, and we never really heard anything. And I don't know, 4 months went by and we just figured that we weren't chosen or whatever. But they a producer reached out, and if you don't know the process, you kind of get interviewed online. It's kind of like they want to see your personalities and hear your story. And they kind of pitch the episode. They kind of talk to you a few times, and then they pitch the episode to their boss, kind of how they see the story evolving. And we got chosen. So that was really
That's
fun.
Great. And the rest is locked down in NDAs, yes. as I can attest to.
So one thing that was interesting, we filmed it in the winter there, which was July. So it wasn't super warm, unfortunately. But, you know, COVID felt like a memory by then. Like it was.
Was this 21? July 20?
No, this was still 2020.
Oh,
wow. We filmed it in July of 2020. Okay. And the lockdown was over. We didn't really. Yeah, we'd scan in, but we didn't have COVID. The sound crew and the director and all those people, they couldn't have come from America, because there was still very strict protocols about entering New Zealand, and you can't do that. So they contracted with a crew that lived in New Zealand. That's how we were able to do it. But because House Hunters International was like based in America, they still had all these COVID rules. So it was like, well, we don't have COVID here, but we had to like, they had to hire a person whose only job was to like wipe down everything on the set. And we couldn't ride together in the same car. We had to be in one car, and the real estate agent had to be in another car, and we weren't allowed, permitted because of what was happening in the rest of the world to even ride together. So that was kind interesting. Of interesting. It's like, well, that's not really our experience here, but they still kind of had to follow all these rules from their legal department.
I'm curious about the time frame and the actual kind of nitty-gritty of the process, specifically with regards to the visa and the licensing there. So from the time you're like, I want to do this, this job looks good, let's proceed. What was the time period to get the visas? Were there any unexpected hurdles? What was that process like?
I'd originally thought we'd go summer of 2020, but for a few reasons, we decided to move up the timeline. And so I think it took about 6 months from beginning to end.
And then the actual kind of paperwork side of things, I feel like credentialing can be pretty burdensome just when you go to a new hospital. Was the visa process particularly burdensome, or was it fairly straightforward and easily guided through?
It was fairly straightforward. It also depends on what kind of visa you're going to apply for. You can apply for like a permanent, like a residency visa, which we did not do because we weren't planning on living there forever, but you can do that. But yeah, it was pretty straightforward.
We talked about the pay being lower than in the U.S., but how did the cost of living in New Zealand compare to your life in the U.S.?
It was quite high.
Low pay and high cost of living.
Yeah. We bought a car that wasn't very expensive. Interestingly, cars you can get pretty cheap because Japan is pretty close and they have this whole supply of used cars from Japan. The only problem is all the screen, it's all in Japanese, like for your GPS and everything. So you just ignore that. I think I can't remember exactly, but I feel like we paid maybe $5,000 for a minivan. But when they talk about rent, they tell you the cost per week. And we lived in a pretty not nice house. It is not uncommon with homes that are older in New Zealand to have really poor insulation and no HVAC. So there's no central heat and there's no central air. I'm not surprised about the air. This no central heat surprised me, and really poor insulation. And that's the kind of home we lived in. And I think we paid around $800-$700 a week.
So cheap cars, expensive rent.
Yeah.
Low pay.
A nice home that, like a nice maybe 1,400 square foot home in our area would have been around $1 million.
Jeez.
New Zealand, but still, yeah.
Still, yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing is, I mean, we weren't interested in buying a home because we knew we wouldn't be there forever, but New Zealand mortgages are really different. They are not a fixed interest rate, and you might get like four or five different mortgages that are different terms, and then they're variable mortgages. So,
and then do they also do like the bidding process if you want to buy a house? Is that a thing
exactly
there?
If a house is for sale, you won't see a price on it. It's all kind of like under the table sort of discussion about what a house is probably going to go for. And you kind of bid it out like through a secret bid process. So it's a little tricky.
So one thing I've wondered about this with the pay differential in New Zealand compared to the U.S., you know, being 4 or 5x and the cost of living being higher than a lot of especially Midwestern cities where you and I both live. Why not work in the U.S., save aggressively, and then just go stay long term in New Zealand, like take a year, 6 months with the family, assuming you can get the visa?
That's for Americans who want to go and make New Zealand their home, they need to realize it's actually quite difficult. I mean, we're an advantage because we're well educated and we are doctors that they need, but a lot of types of professions can't get a visa to New Zealand. The other thing is, say you want to bring your parents there so the grandparents can be there with their kids. That's almost impossible. Can't do that because they, a lot of reasons, this sounds kind of horrible, but, you know, they see it's a burden on their healthcare system because it's a socialized medicine healthcare system. And here you're bringing people who aren't contributing to the economy, and then they'll be on the healthcare system. So it's very, very difficult to bring retired persons to New Zealand. There is a special type of visa that requires like $2 million of investment. I don't really understand that one very well, but it's really hard.
Yeah, there's some billionaires who are like setting up their bunkers there.
Yeah.
Probably through that route.
The money, then you're good. But yeah. So even though things weren't perfect in New Zealand, I think that When I've read about quality of life for physicians in New Zealand being so much nicer and they don't work as much and things like that, I really think that's mostly for the specialists who are employed by the government. I found as a family doctor or a GP that I worked a lot. I still had all the same problems there that I had here as in an employed position, which was seeing a lot of patients, no time to answer messages, no paid time to look at the labs. So I would come home and be doing notes and messages and labs in the evening, the same as I did in America.
That's wild because, you know, I think that might be a misconception that we have. It's kind of like the grass is always greener phenomenon. That, oh, New Zealand has such a nice work-life balance. I remember at the time, I wasn't talking to you much. I was talking more to Dave. And it always seemed like you were working. It seemed like you were grinding it out there.
I kind of still am in some of the New Zealand Facebook GP groups and medicine groups. And I just kind of more of a lurker now. I don't really participate in the discussion. But I see the same sentiment that we see here in America, that they feel overworked and underpaid, and they're burning out the same as in America. So I don't think it was just me. I do see that and hear that. We, in a half day, we'd see patients every 15 minutes, which is fine, but the same thing goes here. You know, you have to do your note. You have to put in your orders. I would also say, I don't know if it's part of where I worked in the rural area, but even though we were rural, it was a really big practice. There were 7 or 8 doctors, but we just didn't have the staff. So I roomed my own patients. I did my own vitals. I had to clean my rooms in between patients.
So that's a COVID phenomenon, or was this,
no,
did this carry on after
just,
you guys got?
You're just busy.
Yeah.
So, and they don't have the staff. They don't have the money to be paying staff for all of that. So you would basically work out of one room. That was your room for the day. So your 15 minutes not only included seeing the patient, doing their note, putting in their orders, but also turning over the room. So it's not like I could go from one room next to the next to the next. I had to clean the room, get ready for the next patient. Now, I have no problem doing that. And in my direct primary care practice, I room my own patients and do my own vitals. But I have 30 minutes to sometimes an hour for a patient. So I kind of have the schedule set up that way. So it was just, I found it very difficult. The other thing is we were in a very rural area. And so you kind of saw everything. So kind of we were assigned either scheduled patients or urgent patients. And an urgent patient could be like someone walking in who has a fish hook in their mouth or something, you know, and that was, we took care of it.
Must be a New Zealand thing.
You know, we lived by the ocean. That was, it was fishermen. Fishing was one of the largest industries. So we saw all kinds of trauma, all kinds of typical medical issues, and we were 3 hours away from the nearest hospital. So we were kind of it until you could get an ambulance. And then you say, oh, okay, we'll call the ambulance. No big deal. It might take 4 hours for the ambulance to come to transport patient.
Were there mid-levels in the general practitioner realm? NPs, PAs?
There were none at my practice. There are right now just starting to be some mid-levels in New Zealand, and they're starting to see some of the same issues there that we're starting to see here. I think a lot of American doctors that I talked to, one reason why they wanted to go to New Zealand, or one of the benefits of New Zealand medicine in their mind when they went, was they weren't mid-levels. So they felt like that was safer overall. But I think we're going to start seeing more of that too.
Do you see yourself returning to New Zealand in the future to work or visit? Or was this a one-time adventure?
I don't think I would ever go back there to work. I have a wonderful job. I love my job. I have a very successful direct primary care practice and breastfeeding medicine practice. And I work way less now than I worked in New Zealand. So I'm very happy doing what I do. Difficulty for me now is I love to travel, and that is hard when you are a single physician practice to have coverage to travel. So someday I'd like to go back to New Zealand. There are a lot of friends that we made. But when you're in another country and you're all going through somewhat traumatic experience together, it kind of bonds you for life. And We were all going through COVID together. We all, you know, we didn't know what the end was. And so it felt really scary. We were all somewhat isolated from our extended family, couldn't see them. So you become very close to the people there. So we
I know you made some friends with some other expats, I believe, maybe from the Netherlands or Europe somewhere. Mm-hmm. But did you, do you have any friends that you made from New Zealand? Or did you find that was a hard culture to break into?
Yeah. So I think, yes, New Zealand is a hard culture to break into. And I have friends, but not super close friends who are actually Kiwi. Our closest friends were people who were also from other countries. So the exception to that is my friend Yvonne and her husband David. Yvonne is a breastfeeding medicine doctor who I kind of knew of in New Zealand before we left. And we became very close to she and her husband when we lived there. And that breastfeeding medicine connection was nice because it gave us something in common. But they lived in Auckland and our son Luke ended up needing some medical care and surgeries. So we stayed with them and they were really wonderful to us during that time.
And I should say, as far as I know, Luke is doing great now, right?
He's great. Yeah.
Is he a sophomore now or he's...
He is a freshman at Purdue.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. What was your favorite memory from your time in New Zealand, either at work or with your family?
A couple things. So we lived about a mile away from my office and I walked to work every single day and I walked right along the water. So it was just absolutely beautiful. Every morning I'd walk, you know, just right along the ocean. So that was really gorgeous. We got to take an amazing trip to the South Island.
Milford Sound area.
Yeah, Milford Sound. We went to Milford Sound in Queenstown and it was really gorgeous. So that was a great trip and just absolutely beautiful. So that's also a good memory. Yeah. I also will say Christmas Day on the beach was a good memory. Christmas Day there is more like a party. Like everyone has a sausage sizzle. That's what you call a barbecue there. Everyone has a sausage sizzle on the beach on Christmas Day. And, you know, everyone's out playing volleyball or whatever, just having a fun day at the beach. So that was a fun memory.
It'd be interesting to experience Christmas when it's actually summer. There's this Australian artist, Tim Minchin. And he has a song called White Wine in the Sun. It's actually one of my favorite Christmas songs, but basically describes what you're talking about. If you had to describe New Zealand healthcare in one sentence, what would it be?
Well, this is a sticky subject because I know a lot of people feel very passionately about socialized medicine.
We're all about hot takes here on Let's Locums.
Let me say, I did not love socialized medicine in New Zealand. I felt like I'm very thankful people had care and they didn't, you know, you're not going to go bankrupt if you have a chronic medical disease in New Zealand, which is wonderful. But it was so difficult as the first line physician who desperately wanted for people to be able to have a sleep study or a knee replacement or the CT they needed. And you can't
get
it. So
the surgery wait lists there are kind of ridiculous.
There's some sort of laws or rules about how long someone can be on the wait list and the idea is to make the healthcare better. Like, oh, we don't want someone waiting longer than a year for their knee replacement. But what happens in reality is you get on the wait list, you wait for a year, and then after a year, you're kicked off the wait list and you have to go back to the beginning. And I'm not kidding. It's true. It's really hard because the patients come back into me and say, I'm still hurting. I'm desperate. What am I supposed to do for them in my office? I'm stuck. So I found that very difficult. The other thing that was somewhat interesting is I feel like as a family doctor, I have really good training and I know what tests are appropriate to order and when it's inappropriate to order them. But in New Zealand, a GP is different and GPs are not permitted to order many, many tests. I couldn't order an MRI. I couldn't order a CT. I couldn't order a stress test. I can't order a sleep study. I could order an ultrasound and I could order an X-ray and that's it. Everything else had to be ordered by a specialist.
It's less practicability than a med student.
Yeah, but it might take 3 or 4 months to get into the specialist.
Jeez.
So even though I felt comfortable knowing what someone might need, I couldn't order those tests.
So Dr. Dornfeld's one sentence to describe New Zealand medicine is socialized medicine sucks.
I think it could be done better. You know, one thing that's interesting, I don't know that all socialized medicine is so difficult, but I had a really good friend from Amsterdam, who was there with her family doing the same thing I was doing, spending a year working as a GP. Her name was Tanya. She was amazing. I loved her. Her husband was Paul. They had four kids, and they were just there for an experience in New Zealand. And she would say to me, the access to care is so different here than in Amsterdam in the Netherlands. And she said, the other thing is, she said, they have it backwards. So in order to come see your GP in New Zealand, they actually had to pay money. But if someone shows up in the ER in New Zealand, it's free.
That is a little
backwards.
Incentives are not very well aligned for cost containment. And
so, for example, too, you know, GPs and family doctors are trained to do quite a few procedures. So skin cancer is very common in New Zealand. They have a hole in the ozone layer and lots of skin cancer there. And so it's very common for someone to need to have a skin cancer removed. And that they would have to pay $200 or $300 to have it done if we did it, and we could do it within a week or two, or it would be free if they went to a dermatologist or a specialist, but it'd be 6 months to have it done.
Jeez. And so those things grow and you need a bigger reconstruction.
Yeah, that's the sort of silliness that it just seems so frustrating to me and all of us. You know, I could do endometrial biopsies, but that would cost them $100 to pay for me to do it, or they could have it done for free, 3 hours away, by the way, and they'd have to wait 3 months.
Jeez. Yeah, so definitely seems like some barriers care.
Yeah, well, so that I found very frustrating.
On a lighter note, what was your favorite New Zealand food?
Probably the Indian food, which I know that doesn't sound very New Zealand, but there's a lot. I mean, it's a very British influence, and we really loved the Indian food in New Zealand.
What is a Kiwi slang word that you adopted?
I don't know that I adopted it, but we certainly got ourselves into trouble because we didn't really always understand what someone was saying. It was common for a road to be called a metal road. Dave and I thought, well, that's so strange. Why would they make a road out of metal? But it's actually a gravel road. And it took us a really long time to understand that. But instead of saying gravel, they say metal. You know, rubbish, you know, use the rubbish, not trash. A napkin, like to wipe your face with, is a serviette, not a napkin. Pants is underwear, slacks or pants. Jumper is like a sweater. So there were definitely a lot of...
But none that you've adopted back home in Indiana?
No, probably not. Yeah.
Well, Dr. Dornfeld, thank you so much for your time talking about your mixed experiences in New Zealand.
Well, it definitely is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. So I will give it that. I'd like to go back to visit as a tourist.
Visit as a tourist, not work again.
Yeah.
I think that makes a lot of sense for sure. So, all right.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
All right, take care.
You have been listening to Let's Locums, a podcast brought to you by SpecialtyLocums.com and hosted by Drs. Mark and Allison Royer. SpecialtyLocums.com is a physician-run locum tenens company. We're dedicated to providing the best locum tenens opportunities for our amazing healthcare providers. Join us every week as we dive deep into the world of locum tenens. Time stays still.